welcome to this week's... What week is it? What's the day? 26th of February. Yes, 26th of February podcast, Vent the Blog, discussion about Ireland news. And today we're with...
I'm back again, Lawrence, from Ventnor. A contributor to the blog on a number of occasions. And pleased to be here. Thank you.
Sam here again, obviously.
And John, I live part of the time on the island and part of the time in London, so perhaps have a different perspective to put on what's happening here. Find a regular contributor to the blog.
Okay. Well, I guess the big story this week is the signing of the budget, or the fixing of the cuts, or whichever way you want to put it, the voting that went on this week. What are the thoughts on... What do you think, John, on what they came up with and what the compromise that was put forward was?
Well, I think that you were right last week that what would happen would be that some of the proposals from the other budgets will be incorporated by the Conservative group, and then they will block vote, and that would be what happened, and indeed is what happened, a little bit of skirmishing on the way. It was interesting how... they've managed to unite the opposition. I think that was probably the big story, wasn't it?
Yeah. As far as I'm aware, first time ever. And in fact, Jeff Lumley made a sort of a quip to the Tories. He's saying, please help me out here. I'm having to vote with the Liberal Democrats. This is something I never thought I'd see myself doing. So, you know, it was at certain times pretty good-humoured. He is generally good-humoured in the Chamber. But interestingly, maybe we can touch on this later, got completely exasperated later on as well, and really upset about stuff. But, was it... That's what you were thinking last week of the...
Yeah, I mean, I think it played out as I kind of, like, expected it to. I think the very fact that it's always by a show of hands keeps the discipline within the Tory group. And obviously, they had... dealt with any issues behind closed doors. I think kind of it went fairly well. I think for all concerned there. I think the number of interesting things that have come out of this. I think the establishing the Star Chamber. I think is very interesting. I mean, I think it shows that there isn't a definite list. That there is now a rolling list of potential cuts. Depending on, what kind of settlement they get from the government, what other issues, financial issues that might come up, what legal advice they may be getting on various kind of issues at the moment. So I think that's going to be quite interesting how that evolves in terms of influencing how that budget is now implemented.
They were saying monthly reviews, I think.
Monthly reviews, and then there's going to be a midterm.
Yeah.
Major review of the budget as well.
Does that mean that they just don't have a handle on stuff, or they need to be that flexible, do you think?
I think they need to be that flexible.
I'd say just flexibility. And I think what they've got to be really careful of in this is, I'm starting to get a feeling that the council's all about managing decline. And if you're not careful, if it's, we're going to make some more cuts this month, it's going to feel more that way. And I think they're going to have to put a bit more effort into appearing to have a bit of ambition in the things that they're doing there, and the way they're moving the budget around, rather than it just being a matter of cuts. Otherwise, it's just going to seem very dreary, and it's not going to be good for getting back in next time, because it's just going to feel like the council are continually managing a decline in the island, and there needs to be something that's uplifting that comes out of the process. I'm not quite sure what that is. But I think there's a big danger that every month there's more bad news.
That's really interesting. That is really interesting.
I mean, I think that will be borne out after the election, the national election. I think once we see certainly next month we'll see what the Chancellor has to say in the budget. But I think after the next election, depending on who gets in, public spending across the board, central and local government spending, will be cut. So I don't think they can do otherwise, really, at the moment. I mean, they are really preparing for what's going to happen in terms of the public finances being squeezed now. There isn't the money that there was there last year or the year before. to finance their ambition. I mean, and I think they have an ambition. I mean, I think buried away in the press release announcing the budget, I mean, there is still the commitment to improving our roads, to improving the organisation, this business transformation project that they have. But they are, I suppose, management activities that don't exactly excite the residents of the island. So I think it is going to be hard to get a good news story out.
But they need to somehow work out how to motivate people to be doing things that pushes the island forward, perhaps. Might be a way of doing things without money. And, you know, I keep looking at Eco Island and thinking this is really a very stalled initiative. And whether they could perhaps be providing tools to people to be part of that. Like, I mean, for example, maybe they ought to be working with other parties to help people to put their own windmills up or their own photovoltaic cells or something that makes it feel that it's moving forward, that doesn't cost them money. I think that this is what's desperately missing at the moment. It's feeling like decline, and somehow, without using a lot of money, there needs to be initiatives coming forward that feel like moving forward.
Yeah.
I mean, the population.
Yeah, I mean, certainly even picking up on some of the national initiatives, co-opting them into Eco Island, like Warmfront.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, which isn't council money, it isn't controlled by the council, but there's nothing stopping the council co-opting that.
I think Harrington Vale's doing that. But there's that, and also there's that car-free scheme.
The new scheme that's launched this week, yeah, which is Lois Pryor, who's worked on green initiatives with the council for years, and unfortunately was made redundant last year. She's created this new scheme, and the ambition is to get anybody with accommodation, be it hotels, B&Bs, self-catering, or attractions on the island, to give a discount to people who are either going to the attraction by public transport or going to the accommodation by public transport, and trying to cut down on the number of cars that are going along the roads or coming onto the island, which I think is a great idea. You know, wish her well with that, and hope that it's something that people do embrace. But I think, as you say, there's got to be something really positive that's being put forward from the council when all these things are going on with these cuts, which are inevitable, because they haven't got the funds there, and cuts do need to be made in certain places. That to be able to counter that with something positive coming out on a regular basis is...
Can I raise one other thing that was interesting that I thought? I mean, this is the cynic in me, I guess, and that's the issue over the parking permits and them deciding, rather than put the price up to sky high limits, they're just not going to have them. And the cynic in me says that their lawyers have managed to find that Camden in 1995 tried to raise revenue by putting parking charge up, and it was found to be illegal. As I understand the law, you can put parking charges up for traffic purposes, and then you can make money out of it. But if what your aim is to make money purely to raise revenue because you've got a hole in the budget, that is illegal. And the cynic in me says that this is why parking permits has been pushed off to another study. So they'll probably re-emerge, but there'll be a different reason given for given for them. Because I would guess if you did a freedom of information request at the moment, you would be able to get paperwork that showed that the aim of putting the parking charges up was to fill a hole in the budget.
Mm. Right. So there was going to be a 10% rise in charges, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Up to the nearest 10p.
And raising the parking
permits as well.
Yeah. It's also, just to go back to an earlier argument on the parking permits, I had a bit of a think of it, because they were saying what a bargain they were, and I was thinking about how much you pay for parking in London. Mm. I thought Kensington and Chelsea had been interesting comparator.
Not the cheapest place.
No, indeed. And to park there costs somewhere between, depending on exactly where you are in the borough, £1.50 to £3 an hour. So quite a hefty amount.
Right, yeah.
But the parking permits are somewhere, it depends on what sort of car you've got, but they range between about £70 a year and about £150 a year.
For a whole year?
For a whole year. Mm-hmm. And they're also permits that cover the whole borough. So you could live in Ladbroke Grove and go to a concert in the Royal Albert Hall and park in the street at the side of it, or you could go to King's Road and park while you did your shopping. And so I'm not even sure that the arguments that they have good value for money on the island really hold true.
No,
that kept on being said, wasn't it? That, well, you know, you had it really cheap before, therefore we can justify putting it up.
Yeah, well, I mean, casual parking on the island is expensive. I mean, if you go to any other, as you've just said, John, I mean, but even if you just go to the other resort towns on the south coast, mm-hmm. they are cheaper than in most cases than they are here.
Right.
So, I mean, kind of like...
It used to be cheap here, though, didn't it? Was it Joe Duckworth that got all the prices put up, or when did it start accelerating, do you think?
It probably was about that time that prices started to go up. But, I mean, the parking permit was introduced as a, I don't want to be cynical, as an election bribe.
Yeah.
which has now run its course. I mean, you know, that's something that won't be able to be used again to win votes.
Well, that's something someone said, you know, well, here's another thing that the Tories have promised us, then taken away once they got into power. I guess the schools being the other promise that they were supposedly made. They squeezed it by not doing it in the same electoral period, did they? But, yeah. Anyway. One thing that confused me was, will people still be able to park all day in places? Because lots of people use it for park. That's one of the arguments that was used in the chambers. We've done some analysis of the spaces that are being used, and they're being used by people clogging the car parks up, was the phrase they used, by parking there all day. Mm. Well, what's going to happen to the people who need to park in car parks all day because they need to use them for business? Or do they have to buy business permits, or even people working on
business permits are going to continue?
But presumably this is why in the budget proposal they said they were going to raise £750,000 by abolishing the permits, didn't they? So presumably they're expecting people to pay the daily rate.
Well, they're hoping that people will, yes.
Which is an interesting...
And interestingly, because a lot of people have commented already on Ventnor.blog that, well, they're not going to do that. Mm. You know, if you think that I'm going to start going into car parks and putting money, coins in the machine, you're wrong, because I'm going to go, I'll park that bit further away, I'll find off-street parking, and then you get run into this whole big problem. I mean, particularly in Ventnor, we've got a lot of people that have to park in Central Car Park overnight because there's nowhere else for them to park. If they live along the high street, they've got no parking, lots of places without any parking. Mm. It's going to be a really serious problem in places like Ventnor.
Yeah, I mean, I think some towns are going to be hit more than others. I mean, I think the model that you've got in Cowes, where kind of like you've got a number of key car parks and then all the streets are residents only, I think you'll see that in Ryde. So I think it's going to force people to park in the car parks. Mm. I don't think they're going to have another option. Right. If they're commuting or having to go off the island, what we've got in Cowes is going to be duplicated in Ryde. Mm. I think it is a fair point about clogging up kind of car parks with all-day parkers that prevents people coming in and out of the town. But I think all island towns face the same issue of a lack of available parking. There isn't sufficient parking to meet everyone's needs.
Yeah.
And there's no scheme or affordable scheme out there that will actually alleviate that.
I guess, you know, if we hadn't had World War II, there wouldn't be any parking in Ventnor at all, really, would there? Because the central car park wouldn't be there. Victorians selfishly didn't plan for cars.
Well, the same ride. I mean, the old George Street car park where Summerfield is now based, that was cleared due to World War II as well.
Right. Yeah. So we've got something to thank the Germans for.
We have indeed.
That was one of the points that Vanessa Churchman raised, which was, what you've done here is hand the supermarkets a fantastic bonus. And she said, the supermarkets must be rubbing their hands now, thinking, this is fantastic, because people won't be going into towns, they won't be parking in towns, because they'll say, well, we can park at X place and have free parking there.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think it will... I don't think it will affect Newport, because of how central some of the supermarkets are, but certainly in Ryde, which is already battling the Tesco's Extra. I mean, it's just going to make Tesco's more attractive destination for your shopping than staying in Ryde and shopping.
But we might find more of the supermarkets tightening up, of course, like the Staples in Newport.
Right.
That's interesting, yeah.
People seem to be getting well caught there at the moment.
Yeah.
But see, the weird thing about that, I mean, the story behind that is, it was that you could only park there for a certain amount of time, a couple of hours, I think.
It's 90 minutes.
But it used to be 2 hours, yeah, so sometime last year, didn't it?
Yeah.
Then it changed to 90 minutes.
Which, if you're going to see a film...
But it's not there. But presumably the cinema has not paid for that car park. The car park is presumably owned by the landlord of Maplin's and Staples and the other stores that are there. So,
right,
in a sense, it's not their car park. But yeah, I can see why people feel aggrieved about it. I was in Maplin's yesterday, and the guy in front of me was having a real go at the guy on the till about how his wife had got caught by the cameras in the car park when they'd been to see a film.
Yeah.
And he was doing a desperate job of explaining it, but I can see that sort of thing becoming more of an issue, actually.
Right.
Mm.
Which, interestingly, adds to people's feeling of unhappiness, which will be reflected in the view of what the voted-in council is.
Oh, definitely. I mean, certainly just...
Even if it's disconnected. Sorry.
I think the... With the car park at Cineworld, you can't, if you're going to the cinema, you can't park in the Upper Cuppens Bridge car park because it is full of all day parkers.
Is it?
Right. I mean, there's very few spaces there, and I think that with the council's desire to bring back so many more staff to Newport, to County Hall, kind of rather than dispersing them around the island, it's only going to make matters worse. Because, I mean, there is only limited car parking.
I didn't realise until we had contact from some people who worked at the council that the council workers have to pay to park in the car parks that are by County Hall.
Yeah.
They have to buy...
I'd always assumed that was a staff car park.
Yeah.
No.
And
they have to pay.
They have to buy permits. Yeah.
I think it's different for the higher echelons.
The little bit behind the
inner
bush.
Car park.
Yeah, the hidden car park.
Yeah. One little Maserati.
I guess some vectors may do well out of all of this, perhaps. If people say, okay, well, I'm not going to take my car, I'm going to look at maybe getting the bus to work.
I mean, the council has schemes to support their employees to switch to making the journey to work by bus. And,
right. And
I suppose the good thing since Go Ahead took over Southern Vectors is that we have seen a bigger investment in kind of buses on the island, better network, more frequent network. I mean, every 7 minutes to Cowes, every 10 minutes, 15 minutes to Ryde. So it does mean that...
If you live in the North Island, the island, you do well.
It is always difficult. I mean, between the major population centres, there is good bus services. It's the problem with rural areas that are faced all over the country is how do you kind of like provide a service that meets the needs of residents where they're few and far between. That is fairly cost effective. It is very hard.
I guess my concern about the buses is the cost of the fares. If you're a concessionary user and you get free travel, that's fine. If you're on some sort of long-term season deal, that's fine. But it's very expensive to sample the bus services on the island.
Casual travel has always been an issue for some vectors.
And I just wonder whether if they halve those casual prices, whether they get three times as many people on the buses.
Right.
And that's possibly a solution to Eco Island because, well, A, it's very difficult to... I mean, my experience of buses is they're very expensive that from one use of them, and so I sort of steer away from them for that reason. Mm. And I can't find out on the website what individual fares are, and so I'm sort of put off taking buses because I'm not wanting to take enough for it to be something I'd have a weekly ticket for or something else, and so you sort of look at it and think, well, actually, it's... I think it's probably cheaper to park when I get there. And that is something that needs to go back to the Eco Island thing. That's something that needs to be sorted out in this process. And I just think that the on the spot prices are unbelievably high on the island.
What is it to get to Newport? £4 from here or something?
I don't have no idea. I think it's about £3 to Shanklin, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a minimum fare of £2.50.
£4, that's £8 return to Newport. It's a hell of a lot of money.
I mean, in London, it's £1.20 for any distance on a bus.
Right. But you can't compare London or an urban area, large urban area, with a rural area
but I have to say, since the fares used to be twice as much in London, and there are half as many people on the buses.
Buses are completely different organised in London.
Yeah, no, but the point I would make is that since the fares have been much more competitive in London, it has moved people from the tubes onto the buses, and the buses are much fuller. And it has worked, pricing the buses much more competitively. And I just wonder whether a similar policy here would be a good way of supporting the whole Eco Island thing.
Yeah, I mean, where there is some degree of flexibility with the student rider, that's kind of like proved a godsend to a lot of young people on the island in terms of opening up bus travel and opening up being able to get to another town. Mm. Whereas the previous scheme was very restrictive and only gave kind of discounts on the buses at certain times.
Right.
So and the numbers have shot up. Mm. If there is some kind of like lowering of prices, it could well do. But again, it comes down to money.
Yeah.
Who's going to pay for it? Mm. And the fact that the council remains out of pocket because of the National Concessionary Fare Scheme.
Those figures came up again because figures that had been quoted previously in the chamber were it's costing us £3 million. My understanding is the government has given the council one and a bit, nearly £2 million. So the thought was actually, well, it's just why do you keep using this £3 million? But Councillor Giles stood up and gave the figures again, and it's sort of 2.8, 2.9 short. So there is a shortfall still of £3 million, which, my understanding was, legislation said no one is to be in pocket or out of pocket from it.
Absolutely.
So it's not quite working right then, is it?
But no, it's not.
Maybe it's because the island has a lot more retired people, has people visiting as well.
Yeah.
It's a tourist destination.
I think they take into consideration the number of retired people in the general population, but it's the additional visitors that pushes up the numbers using the buses under the scheme. And obviously the cost to the council.
One interesting thing that came up in the budget meeting, or in the full council meeting, was, and this consistently referring to the fact that we have an increasing ageing population on the island, and it's almost as though the majority of people on the island are retired people. And actually, what is that? The average age is 43. And the statistics of the groups, the various age groups, I was quite surprised at how little actually there are 60 plus. The impression that we're given regularly at these council meetings was actually a lot smaller than I thought it would
be. Far from me to be cynical, but the people who vote are the older population.
Yeah.
They are.
Mm. So you've got to keep them happy if you want to stay in power, because they're the ones that continue to vote, whereas middle-aged people, half-interested, younger people, not interested at all. So I guess you play to the gallery, don't you?
I think you do.
Yeah, and that's something Jeff was accused of doing. Jeff Lumley, George Brown, accused him of playing to the gallery. He was talking to the gallery, actually. But it's a good speech. Yeah, he did well on it. But I guess, it's interesting how parking has been a real bugbear for people. I can't believe the reaction we had when we posted that thing about the increases that were spoken about. But the other side of it is obviously this massive cuts on spending on vulnerable people, services for vulnerable people.
Yeah.
What is it, 2.7 million less?
2.7 million
that they're going to be having?
They said that they were going to put 750,000 back in, which is what they're making up from not going ahead with the parking permits, because they think that would cost them, it was about 600,000, wasn't it? But there's still this 1.9 million, actually, which this 1.9 million which was money that came in. It was an underspent between 2003-2009. Actually, in 2009-10, they overspent by 400,000, so that year's not counted, and that's when the ring fence was taken off. So the money prior to that isn't ring fence, was ring fence, sorry, and should have been spent on supporting people, as in capital supporting people. And interestingly, when the press release came out about them having this extra £750, they used the word supporting people, and I didn't notice, £750,000, I didn't notice that they weren't using it in capitals. My assumption was that it was going to supporting people, as in the programme. And actually somebody came on and corrected us and said that you need to look at it closely and you need to see that in fact... Look at the case. It's lowercase supporting people, and so what actually it's going back to is community services to support to support people, rather than the supporting people programme. So they still have got that 2.7 million cut, which is going to have a really massive effect.
Probably a disproportionate effect for the amount of money as well, I'd have thought.
I mean, the arguments that were coming out were that places like Westminster House, for example, is underutilised, but for the people that do use it, it's a massive thing, isn't it, really? It's the difference between, for a lot of families, you know, it's the difference between going over the edge.
I'm sure it is.
You know,
it's respite, isn't it? People have pretty severely hard lives already.
And they already have the situation that a lot of families do their own caring as well, which is actually saving the council a huge amount of
money. That's what I was going to say. I mean, I just wonder in the end how much of that money is really going to be saved, because somebody, possibly not all of the council, but somebody in the public sector is going to be picking up some of the consequential costs of this, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, this is Jonathan Bacon's argument. He's referring back to research from Capgemini. I can't remember the figures exactly, but it's something like five times the cost. If you spend the money, you save five times what it is actually going to cost you in the end. And I don't think that was really answered in the chamber.
No. That argument I've heard prior to the full council meeting, and it was something like 10.2 million was the estimate that it would actually end up costing the council. Because if you take away those services from people who, you know, it's their lifeline of having somebody come in and support them, help them sort their bills out, to help them, you know, make sure they've got somewhere to live, etc. That's taken away. These people... I mean, I know somebody who works in that service industry and said that if she wasn't there to support her clients, she's only got a handful of clients that she deals with each week, but if she wasn't there, if that service was taken away, those people the next day would be end up in 7 acres, and then it's an additional cost, and obviously then it's you get that whole tragic situation with the downward spiral.
What was the answer? Because we asked the press office about the 1.9 million. Did we get a full answer on that?
We haven't had an answer on it.
Haven't yet. At all?
No.
So that's, what, 2-3 days?
Yeah.
Haven't an answer?
Yeah.
Okay. So what about this thing about Riverside Centre? That they're being asked about for an extra 100,000, not only are they having the money cut, I think that's still happening, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're also going to be asked for rent of quite a serious amount of money, by the sounds of it.
Certainly is, and I think it... I think the disappointing thing is that it really does undermine that kind of like a major institution in the voluntary sector on the island.
It is a hub.
There's so much in the voluntary sector kind of like is based out of the Riverside. And I don't think anybody could complain that it's underused. I mean, the centre is always being used, and they always seem to kind of like bring new groups in to make use of it. So, I mean, it would be a great pity to see the Riverside Centre go if they can't support that type of rent increase.
What's the justification for the rent increase? Does anyone know? I haven't picked up on that.
I imagine it's the wider budget issues, isn't
that
it?
That we need money, therefore we need money. To claw it back from.
Yeah.
seems mad is the voluntary sector is something that, if you put in, I'm picking numbers out of the air, you put in £1, you could probably get the equivalent of 100 quid out of it.
Yeah.
Because it's the voluntary sector. It's people giving their time.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
Why would you want to cut back something that would allow that much more good to come out of it?
I mean, I think the council is caught between kind of like the it can't sell any assets, so it has to improve the return on its kind of asset base.
Mm.
And obviously the Riverside Centre is one of its substantial kind of like bits of property that's in kind of fairly consistent and, I wouldn't say profitable, but it generates money. So I think they're looking to get a bigger share of the pie there.
Right.
I mean, the other worry is whether, as part of this whole kind of like rolling review of council expenditure, that we will see a gradual, and I think we're already seeing it, a gradual withdrawal from doing anything that is non-statutory.
Yes.
I think that is the worry.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I kind of like, there's been a number of examples around the country where kind of councils have withdrawn or started to withdraw from providing anything but what they have to by law.
I think this particular council will take that stance, definitely.
Well, they have already said the core things they're going
to
do.
Yeah. Well, something that we heard yesterday in relation to finances was that when the ride interchange scheme was scrapped, there was a promise of £1.5 million for the public realm of Ryde to sort the area out, you know, as people arrive on the island. And we've heard that that's been scrapped.
Oh, has it?
Yes.
Which, I mean, that's just a double punch in the face, isn't
it? That's now all those people that waited were told not to do anything to their properties.
For how many years?
For five years,
whatever it was.
Told, you know, do nothing at all, don't worry, because it's all going to happen, and these people... and people waiting. Then the interchange scheme was scrapped, and then they were told, "Well, look, don't worry. We're going to give you 1.5 million. We're going to try and make the place look a bit more beautiful, so that when people arrive on the island, they, you know, admire it."
Obviously, I'm interested in the tourism industry, and from a tourism industry point of view, one of the things that happened last year is there was a huge increase in day visitors to the island.
Right.
Now, those day visitors are going to be arriving in Ryde. Mm. And from the tourist industry point of view, the crucial thing to do is to convert those day visitors into people who want to come back and spend and do a staying visit. So Ryde and the whole experience you get when you get there is extremely important for the future of the island's economy, I would say, because if you come, you have a great experience, think, hey, this looks a great place, and then you book to come back again and stay for a long weekend or a week in the season, then that's great for the island. And I hadn't realised that they'd scrap that. That's not good news for tourism.
I don't think it's public knowledge yet. I mean, we had the information from inside the council. I mean, it certainly wasn't in the county press today, so I think it's something that's going to come out over the next week or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, for foot passengers, Ryde is the place people arrive.
Mm.
Okay, some people might turn up at Yarmouth. I can't imagine...
Cows.
Can't imagine anyone turns up to Fishbourne.
Yeah.
Well, one, there's no bus service, and what are they going to do? But bicycles come off there, but you know, a few people in Yarmouth, majority, cows look after itself probably, but the majority come to ride. And it doesn't look good. It doesn't, you know, it's because it's been left for so long.
Mm.
It is. I mean, it is very disappointing. I mean, the interchange plans really did kind of create something special, I think, for Ryde Esplanade. And it's just a pity that the plans haven't gone ahead. All ended up kind of like hitting the buffers.
Yeah, and getting the cancelled. Trains were involved. So.
Well, there
is a plan, actually. Something we were told last night, which I haven't seen yet, I meant to look online today, was the section where, just next to where the trains come in, where there's the supports in between where you drive and where the train comes in, that there's going to be a new car park built there. I didn't know that. Did you know that?
On the supports?
No. Well, those supports are being replaced, and there's going to be a car park for 90 cars built on that section there.
Above the sea, floating above the sea.
Yeah. So
on the old tramway? Or
Yes, yeah.
How are you going to get there?
Yeah. Well, you come down the normal way, I suppose, and it will just be an additional...
It'll be like on the side of the road parking, then, presumably, will it?
Yeah.
Right.
So is this White Link that I'm taking this? Well, is this I'm on the sure. pier?
I haven't, on the pier, at the end of the pier.
Side,
right next to where the train comes in, in the gap in between where you drive and where the train is. that section there. Right. But yeah, we'll have to check it out because apparently it's been online for a while, so it's in consultation at the moment.
That's a bit of a pity. Kind of Ride Again ruins its
right.
the view you have
right.
with another bloody car. Yeah. Sorry, another car
right.
park.
Yeah. I mean, right.
It's just.
Well, it's interesting. I went to the pier, the end of the pier at Ride, and actually, what they've built there, Whiteling, the little whatever it is, coffee shack or whatever they call it, is pretty nice.
It is.
I didn't
big
go
improvement.
In there, but the view. It's lovely going back.
Very nice indeed, I have to say. I mean, kind of like they've made a really good
the right spot.
Job of it. Yeah,
yeah, really good.
I like that, but it has slightly lament the fantastic Victoriana of the old bit of the building though, which was also quite an elegant thing, but it's a much more sensible facility for visitors. I agree.
Yeah. Was staying on transport, Military Road, what is it now? A metre between the... Last week we spoke, it was 4 metres.
It was,
And
3 metres in a week, I mean, goodness.
Yeah,
shocking.
The whole island would be gone by the end of the year.
It was very sad.
Well, I think it's...
So it's single lane traffic along Military Road now?
Yeah.
For another week, maybe.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
With the heavy rain we had yesterday with the flash floods. Which
but I understand, there's an emergency meeting of Cabinet, isn't there, at the end of March to discuss it.
Yeah, it'll be
quite
gone
an
by
emergency. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it does seem absolutely ridiculous that this has been known about. I mean, goodness sake, what we've got here in Ventnor, well, before they sell it off, we've got the Coastal Erosion Centre here.
Yeah.
I'm sure the people within there, they seem pretty switched on. They must have informed the council.
Oh, well, they've been monitoring it for a long time. It's just a question of whether anything's been done about it. And the council have admitted that they've been monitoring the situation at that particular point at Brook for a very long time. So it makes you question, why haven't they put anything in place, just even as temporary measure?
I guess that we have had quite abnormal weather over the last two or three months. And what they saw as being 5 years or 10 years away may have suddenly happened in 3 months. To be fair to them,
that is possible.
Because the cliff hasn't been eroding to that extent, but with the snow and then the quite rapid thaw and then all the rain that we've been having, you can see why they're very very unusual conditions. So maybe it is something that's quite a shock to happen and has been set off by the huge amount of rainfall. My guess is they were thinking this would happen in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, and they were perhaps planning against that. But they need to pull these plans forward pretty quickly, don't they?
Yeah.
But I thought we'd had reports of some pipes splitting along there for Yonks back, wasn't there, that caused
drainage,
more water damage and effectively encouraged the land to fall away. So, I mean, they must have known about that. How do we know about that? If and they don't. That doesn't seem right, does it?
No.
I suppose it depends if it's been seen as a priority.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the question. I mean, kind of, there is no through bus route now.
Mm-hmm.
You've got one summer service,
that goes
all the way along the road twice a day or something. Mm. So you haven't got as major disruption, I think, as you would have had.
Well, for bus users.
For bus users.
But anyone who wants to use the Alma ferry from down south.
Well,
yeah.
What
do you
mean? I mean, that's our route to the ferry, isn't it?
You can
obviously go inland. But also, it's, you know, it's world-class views. That, I mean, driving down from Blackgang, heading out west.
It's a tourist,
tourist
view.
Yeah.
It is one of the attractions of the island, definitely driving along that road, isn't it? And at the end of it is... It is sort of the iconic thing on the island, which is the Needles, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people would use it to go there. I mean, whenever I have any friends who come and visit me, the one thing that they want to do before they go back is go to the Needles and go up and down the military road to go there.
Well, maybe it gets turned into a train line, and it's just or a hover rail or something that doesn't cause any
hovering
pressure.
Above the sea.
Yeah,
kind of that's what it would probably be. But I think this may have, I think there'd be more to come out of this. I think this is...
It's really serious.
Yeah, potentially a can of worms, really.
Yeah.
Because of, I mean, obviously, they do keep an eye on various sections of the military road to see how the erosion's going. Obviously, I think there's a couple of bridges over a couple of the small chimes along the route, so obviously they keep an eye on those as well from a safety point of view. But again, it comes down to where do you go for the money? I mean, if the Department for Transport isn't going to be too forthcoming with money for roads, I think it's going to be a real issue, really, for the council if they're going to put it back in terms of a single route, or will they have to divert it? I mean, I think it's...
Well, they are talking about diverting it pretty majorly inland, but what about just buying the land? Can't they just buy the land along there, or compulsory purchase it? Or
I think the council has a very interesting history with compulsory purchase orders. I mean, of not wanting to use them.
Right.
I think that there's there just seems to be a resistance to taking that step.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, because other councils seem to use them, make good use of them to facilitate development that they need. So, I mean, it's...
Well, it's not like, I mean, compulsory purchase, it doesn't mean like the farmer gets nothing.
No.
They get market value, don't they?
Yeah,
it's not like they're getting stitched up.
No, and bearing in mind, I imagine that there's a lot of land along the military road that isn't being used. I mean, and kind of because of EU...
Right.
Rules and all that. I mean, maybe that's an option, but again, where's the money coming from?
Well, it comes down to cost, doesn't it? Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. And at the moment, they're stretched.
I don't know what is the cost for a new road. I mean, how much is it going to be per mile? That's
when
the
question. Look at how much it's going to cost to patch up the roads, then.
What do you mean, the 300 million or whatever it is there?
But, I mean, yeah, I mean, even with the PFI is not going to pay for a new road.
No, that's just to replace it.
So the council's still got to find the money to put in, or to put a new section of new road in at that point. Because the PFI won't be there to pick up that type of loss of the road.
They're just resurfacing, not road.
Yeah.
Well, redoing the roads, but not, there's not new roads.
Yeah.
There's no new roads in the PFI.
Yeah.
It is just the existing road network.
So do you think the South is going to rise up and say, stop ignoring us, you've got to do something about this? Because I think it's a major problem for the South.
Well, it's going to be very interesting in Knighton, isn't it? If the Undercliff Drive isn't sorted out, and the military road, because they're going to be sort of at the end of the road, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's going to
be joking last week that maybe that's what they want.
Yeah. maybe become like Hull. No one ever goes through Hull. They only ever go to it.
Is that why you go to Hull and back?
Indeed.
Sorry, John.
I was just saying. I'm somewhat bothered about the Undercliff Drive as well. I went along to the consultation.
Was that the meeting or the PDFs stuck?
No, I went along to the Winter Gardens. To the Botanic Gardens.
Yeah.
But the same stuff is online. I'll tell you what worries me. The plan at the moment, there don't seem to be options, but the plan is to patch up the existing road and get it back to double track working, and there's about five different places they want to do that.
On the Undercliff?
On the Undercliff.
Yeah.
But then to do quite significant changes to the inland route through Whitwell. And when you look in detail at what they're doing there, it seems to me that the Undercliff Drive is going to cease to become the A3055, because the give way as you come out of Ventnor on Alpine Road and you go down by the Royal Hotel, instead of going down by the Royal Hotel being the main road and then going into Undercliff Drive, you go up the hill at that point, and there's give way markers on that line. And what worries me is that in the short term, yes, they're doing something to sort out the Undercliff Drive. If the other road then becomes the A road, when the Undercliff Drive next has any problems, they can say, well, this is not such an important road, we don't need to do something about it. And I'm just a bit worried that we may get a short-term help for the south of the island there, and not a long-term. I'm being cynical again.
No, I mean, kind of like... But I suppose the issue is, and I had my reservations about the ongoing kind of pouring of money into Leon Cliff. As it's fairly inevitable, it's going to keep going. Why are we throwing good money after good money at something that's going to end up in the channel in a couple of years' time?
Why not invest in
putting a proper route through Whitwell and Knighton to make sure that we
have a bypass, route. At least around. Right. Maybe
well, it's been dropped, hasn't it?
I wouldn't think bypass. Yeah.
The strategic case, I realise it's a little bit weak, but the strategic case I'd make for the Undercliff Drive is last month when we had the snow in Ventnor. Ventnor was cut off towards Shanklin. It was cut off towards Newport.
Yeah.
And the only way in and out of Ventnor was through the Undercliff Drive for two or three days. And even that hadn't been gritted. But you could get in and out of the town that way. But that was the only way you could get in and out of the town, because the council didn't have the suitable gritting equipment to grit the hills coming into the town in the other direction. No. I know that's a little bit of a weak case, but it is a way of getting in and out of the town that doesn't involve hills.
I won't disagree. I think that touches on another subject, is how the council reacted to how it ignored Ventnor during the snow.
We could have a whole hour on that.
Yeah, we could. Sorry for raising that.
So, I mean, is that maybe the way that it's being viewed as, well, it's only Ventnor, don't worry about it. That's why the Undercliff and, to a lesser extent, the Military Road are not being considered that much.
Maybe how does it fit in with, I suppose, the overall island plan as still being formulated by the council? I think from what I've read, there isn't any major developments being proposed in the area of Ventnor or along the Military Road. I don't think it isn't a priority at the end of the day.
I mean, it must have provided 50% of the press coverage in the last year, hasn't it? Ventnor? Seriously?
Yeah.
The island? Must have been half of it.
It's true, actually. Yeah. Hamburg and...
Yeah, the Royal and other places.
Yeah.
And just general articles about editors who brought places down here. And
even film stars.
Yeah.
Visiting, apparently. So this thing about the downgrading the road, does that mean there's less responsibility for maintaining it if it's not an A road anymore? Is there certain statutory things that have to happen to A roads?
Yeah, I mean, there is an A road network which would have the priority in terms of maintenance.
They have to provide the maintenance in some way.
Yes, but the B roads are lesser roads. They are not seen as priorities.
Right.
So the kind of like the funding will go on maintaining kind of like a set route, kind of like rather than
right.
And I think John's right. I mean, I think there is a potential issue there of
undeclared intention.
Well, I couldn't find it anywhere in the consultation material.
Yeah.
What was going to be A3055?
Right.
And I have subsequently asked the council, and I haven't had a very clear answer either.
So the junctions that they're putting in, where they're changing the junction, just up behind the Royal Hotel, and then also the traffic lights in Whitwell and the roundabout in Knighton, that kind of all steers towards that being a major road.
There it was also a roundabout at the end of Trinity Road, St Boniface, wasn't there, as well? So there's quite a major amount of work happening along that route.
Which, if you think about how people come down through Ventnor, they're just going to bypass Ventnor, actually, aren't they? They're going to come down, they're going to go around the roundabout, they're going to go off towards...
Which roundabout's this?
The one it was going to be up here,
Trinity Road. You know where the U-Bend is, Trinity Road?
Yeah, that's going to be a mini roundabout. So at the moment, people are sort of steered down into town, really, by sticking on that main road, whereas if the A3055 changes to be going along... Right. Past the St Boniface School and the tennis courts and up round to Whitwell Road, people might stop going into town as well.
Well, if they've got nothing signposted to go in there, why would they? Not good.
Yeah.
So the last couple of bits, we should probably wrap up soon, but things I had down were, the GKN contract sounded pretty positive, and there was a they're putting a large investment in for new works on there as well. Factory,
yeah. Which sounded good. 14 million odd quid. But yeah, the winglets was the thing that they'd, the contract they picked up, which was a massive contract for about 25 years, I think, which is great. I don't think it meant they were going to have any extra employees, but it just meant that they had that security for that period of time.
But with £7 million government aid as well.
Right.
£7 million.
Okay.
Right. CEDA are investing. Yeah.
Right.
Regional Development Agency in creating the facility at GKN for them to be able to fulfil that order.
Right.
So but it's the sort of jobs we want on the island, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
it's high tech, isn't it? It's carbon fibre, that sort of stuff, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, on that front, it seems to have been good news. Kind of, I think George Brown was kind of mentioning that in kind of I think a press release this week, saying about kind of like both GKN and Vestas remaining committed to the island. So I mean, that's a good bit of economic news.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is that the 7 million from CEDA goes towards the 14 million factory? Does it? There's probably like for like funding.
Could possibly be. Yes. Yeah. All I read in the press release was that CEDA were putting in 7 million. Didn't say how much that was as part of the overall package for the facility, but
can't be bad though. So that would be up in sort of northward Cowes area.
Yeah.
Expanding that site. That's good news. What the other one I had was festival. Whether the announcements for that excite you at all? Has it made you rush and go and buy tickets?
I
forgot what the festival ones were.
The festival was Devendra Banhart, which I'm looking forward to, because I think his works are really good. And he's, as you know, the Paul Butler from the Bees has been working with him for some time now, doing producing for him over in LA. And Noah and the Whale and Reef.
Reef?
And then obviously on the festival side, Roxy Music, the major band. I don't think they're headlining. They didn't specifically say they were headlining, but they're playing on Saturday on the main stage.
And has Tricky been?
And Tricky, Tricky.
And the fancy dress theme as well.
Fantasy.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes it quite easy.
Yeah, it does actually. It does.
You can just sort of pick something from any of the previous years and then work.
But I mean, I think it's been interesting. I mean, I think kind of like certainly with Best of All this year, they must have struggled to find acts to top last year.
Right.
I think Kraftwerk, kind of like a fairly iconic moment for Best of All. But Festival seems to have come out with a really good lineup. Admittedly, a lot of Festival's lineup from previous years seems to come through. But I mean, it's the way they complement each
other. Roxy Music, Festival of Borough.
But it is good to see that kind of like I did worry when the Festival and Festival started that there was going to be that competition. But it's very much complementary.
I think the Festival
breaks the acts that. Yeah. Will be on the festival main stage a year or 2 years later. So it works quite nicely.
Still haven't had the big one from the
still
festival,
waiting for
we?
The Sunday night.
Sunday night,
yeah. And there's, you know, obviously been lots of rumours. Well, Paul McCartney was the one which is the only rumour that they haven't denied.
Really?
Yeah, there are lots of other people have been suggesting Kings of Leon and sort of various acts, and they've said no. And then Paul McCartney was the only one, when we approached them and said, you know, can you confirm or deny it? And they said, but we're not going to comment on it. Yeah. Something along those lines, wasn't it?
We'd rather not say that we're confirming or denying, is what they said.
Yeah. That's quite an interesting response, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I guess it's a good way of keeping, even if it's not true, keeping PR interest up, doesn't it?
But I should think that probably it'd be fairly soon that the Sunday will be announced.
And they haven't given the date for when they're going to make a press release.
We had been told early March. For one of them, but I think that may be the one that they just brought forward and did last week, because there seems to be this sort of battle between Festival and when they make their releases, and there's all sorts of shenanigans going on apparently, so we won't go into that.
But interestingly, they're all announcing a lot earlier this year.
Yeah, definitely a lot earlier. And there's obviously that fight for tickets, you know, for winning the ticket, winning people buying tickets. And
it's gonna
festival
be...
was, you know, normally sold out before they've even announced the acts.
Right. I think it's going to be harder this year. I mean, certainly last year, I think a lot of people were able to still go because they bought tickets early.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with the number of redundancies both locally and nationally, mm-hmm. I think some of the people I would have thought that I know would go this year
mm-hmm.
can't afford it
yeah.
because they've lost their job. Or
do you think they're holding out for a bit to find out? I mean, it's interesting with my bookings in my holiday business. People are leaving it a lot later this year than they were than they were last year. I think I'll get there, although we are apparently out of recession, the effects of the recession seem to be worse this year than they were last year. And I wonder if that's affecting why they're putting these announcements forward.
Yeah.
And I suspect that a lot of people in business are thinking, I want to get the money in the can before there's an election because things are going to look a lot worse once we have a post-election budget.
Right.
Definitely.
And I suspect that a lot of people are working towards let's get the bookings, let's get things in before there's an election.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think
the economy is not going to look great after the election, whoever wins.
Mm. I don't know. I mean, it depends on which set of economists you believe kind of like in terms of predicting what's going to happen after the next election, but I think that the fear is that should the Tories get in, that there's the potential for the economy to dip back into recession if the cuts to public spending are too kind of quick and too deep, that may kind of put people off from booking early. But I think also just with the festival thing, I think festivals generally peaked maybe last year. You saw a number of festivals across the country being cancelled at the last minute because they couldn't sell tickets.
Mm.
And I don't think there hasn't been the announcements of many new festivals kind of like this
seems that 2-3 years back they all blossomed up, didn't they? Everyone and their dog was starting a festival.
Totally,
We were looking at one in Croatia.
Mm.
Oh, right.
And amazing place, looks phenomenal, beautiful sunshine, blue sea, acts are really impressive. £75.
I think that's going to be the next stage for the next evolution for festival goers. It's going to be Europe because the festivals are that much cheaper.
Mm. And also,
festivals here are expensive.
Yeah, it's lots of money.
It is.
But also smaller.
Yes.
Going back to, I mean, festival, you know, the year it was 10,000 people was the best time ever.
Definitely.
It was fantastic. Yeah. You know, the jump up to 15 and then 30 and then last year 45,000 people was just, for me,
too
many people. Doesn't have the same, you know, it was still a good festival in terms of the acts that were on, always a brilliant, you know, he picks fantastic acts, but for the type of festival that I like to go to, I think the 10,000 mark is about right.
Yeah, I do agree. I mean, I think last year, it was the first year at Bestival I noticed crowds being very dense.
Right.
Yeah.
I think in previous years it hadn't been so bad, but last year it was some difficult moments. Certainly when at the end of certain acts ended and people made the move to another field, there were some very kind of difficult moments. I think for moving those people between fields. I mean, obviously they're going to make changes based on...
This year, it's all going to be completely different.
Yeah, absolutely.
The layout again.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully the stage will be at a point where you can see the acts.
And hear them, hopefully.
And hear them,
yeah.
I don't know, old-fashioned ideas. But good, all right, well, thanks very much.
Thank you,
Sam. Maybe just before we finish up, just mention the situation at the coroner this week.
Oh, yeah.
With the coroner.
Well, I mean, of course, the case is incredibly sad. And the actions of the coroner are pretty surprising, really. But I think from the amount of support that we've had, it's just been quite extraordinary. It really has. journalists from all over the UK calling us, offering support, saying it's outrageous what's happened, and offers of barristers offering their time and solicitors and. Yeah, I don't...
I guess just to recap for people who might be listening but haven't read the story, you attempted to attend an inquest this week.
I was in an inquest.
In an inquest. You had already gone into an inquest and was asked to leave
by the coroner's official. I sat between BBC and the county press.
As a member of press. And the guy
said, could I have a word with you? Which, isn't exactly, can you leave the court, please? And... So I got up to have a word with him. He said, no, bring your pencil and pen as well. Or your pen and paper. And then it's like, oh, and your coat and your hat. I thought I'd pulled, and then it took me a long way away to tell me that I wasn't welcome in the court, which was just seemed extraordinary. Mm. I think worrying, I'm sure, well, I don't know what the intention of the coroner was because he refused to speak to me, but... If the coroner's court is not a place of public access, I think there's some pretty serious problems with society. Yeah. Potentially, really serious problems. If you can't find out how people have died publicly, goodness knows what can go on.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think it is... it is a very difficult case, but I think... I suppose kind of it's only been in the past couple of years that coroner's courts have become more prominent, certainly around what's been happening in Afghanistan and abroad. I mean, they've been the forum where families have found out information that they've been denied elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems a pity that a coroner made a decision. I mean, kind of like he did. I mean, I think it just needs some explanation, really.
It seems, from the statement that we've had, obviously we weren't there to hear the statement that was read out, but something was read out at lunchtime, which people have told us a rough idea of what it is. We've asked the coroner, and they have completely ignored us. They haven't given us the notice to even tell us why we've been excluded. But it seems to be on the basis of something that happened in 2008, where the coroner wrote to Sal and said there's something that she put up, about a
I'd reported. It was the first time I'd reported about suicide, and I'd used the term that somebody had taken their own life.
It's someone from the forum.
It was posted on the forum by somebody else, the person who'd actually found this poor chap, and so I'd written this article with the statement from the police to confirm his name, etc. Within an hour of putting the article up. We had a call from the press office, an email actually from the press officer at the police to say that you couldn't use that phrase and that you should use sudden death. Changed it within 2 minutes. Figured it was all over and done with. And a couple of days later got a letter from the coroner stating that he'd been made aware by the police that we had written and I'd used this term, that I couldn't use that term because he'd opened the inquest and it would be contempt of court. As we'd already changed it, just sort of figured, well, that's fine. He said in the letter, this is a private warning to you. I won't take the matter any further. And we didn't think any more of it. On Tuesday, the letter was written to me as well, not to Simon. On Tuesday, Simon was in the inquest as a member of the press with his press card, NUJ member for 9 years, writing for this publication for 4.5 years. And was told that what was held up as being the issue was the letter, the communication that he'd had with me 2 years ago, which obviously has nothing at all to... It's completely disconnected from Simon as a member of the press. And subsequent discussions that we've had with barristers, it seems that even him saying that I was in contempt of court was actually incorrect.
It's questionable. That's questionable.
Questionable, yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. We wrote the article, put the article out on Tuesday, and as Simon was saying, we've had a massive amount of support in the blogosphere, in the journalism world. NUJ have come out and shown their support for us. We didn't even get in touch with them, and they'd heard about it. They've been in touch with the coroner's court already. And, we've had barristers contact us and say that they're prepared to... act on our behalf to take it to judicial review if need be. I mean, we're just waiting, still waiting, just to have an answer from the coroner, actually, to find out what his reasons were. You know, that would be the first stage for us, to just have some sort of explanation as to why he made that move. As a you know, Simon is a member of the press, but then when Simon said, well, I'd like to come in as a member of the public, and somebody offered to give him his seat, he still denied access.
And someone pointed out to me, I hadn't really thought of it, they said, well, there was space in there, because he was sitting on a chair. And you know, once he left, that chair just sat empty the whole time. So, very peculiar situation. Very peculiar.
And it's worrying if it is something personal, because, you know, the judiciary should sit above all that sort of thing, shouldn't it?
Mm.
And, you know, we need to have faith in the judiciary. And I'm quite interested to see what happens with this, because it's hard for me to see an explanation as to why it happened, let's put it that way.
But I suppose the difference with the coroner is that he's a pillar of the local community, isn't he? I think isn't he a local, isn't he appointed from the kind of from local as a local solicitor or something?
It's normally a lawyer or someone in the medical profession.
Yeah,
it's one of the two, isn't it?
But kind of like so. I mean, they usually are, but they are quite powerful individuals within their courts. But they must still abide by regulations about how to behave. I can't imagine them.
Well, I understand the only time you can exclude somebody from an inquest, because it is a public thing, is that it's only if it's a matter of national security.
Yes.
Or if the family has requested that everyone leaves during the period. That's the other understanding on it, which obviously didn't happen. But
so there'll be more to follow, no doubt.
We'll see.
It's unfortunate it's had to happen. And if he hadn't taken those actions, then none of this would have happened. And the story would have been repeated, and the people who were involved with the sad case of losing their mother and daughter, it would be finished for them. So the repercussions have been extended, unfortunately. So we'll see what happens. Yeah, sad note. So I think we're a bit short on time this week. What were we, hour and a bit?
Yeah, just over an hour.
Okay. So, next week maybe an hour, and then we'll see. But thanks all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. Thanks,
Look forward to feedback.
Excellent.
Cheers.